I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the West Texas measles outbreak continues to spread. It's the worst outbreak in decades for Texas. Measles is a serious disease, but it's easily preventable with a safe and effective vaccine. However, there are communities in West Texas that have avoided vaccinations for their children, and this has given rise to frustration and blaming about this outbreak. But let's pause that response and try to understand the views of those communities in West Texas and then maybe work to build the trust that can improve public health for all Texans. And later on The Source, as the Trump administration continues with mass firings in the federal government, you might think the one place that would be spared would be immigration courts. And yet these firings could mean an increase in expedited deportations without due process. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The West Texas measles outbreak continues to spread. The Texas Department of State Health Services reported on Tuesday that 223 cases have been identified since late January. 29 of the patients have been hospitalized, and there's been one fatality, a school-aged child who lived in the outbreak area. The child was not vaccinated and had no known underlying conditions. We're now learning that it was a 6-year-old girl who died. That is based on the reporting of Tom Bartlett. He's an Austin-based journalist with the Atlantic Monthly magazine, and we're now joined by Tom Bartlett. Welcome to The Source.
Thanks, David.
So, great reporting. You really bring a lot to help understand what is happening in West Texas. So, first of all, can you help us understand your reporting there in Gaines County and meeting Peter?
Sure. So, I mean, I went to Gaines County and to Seminole, which is the town that's sort of the epicenter of this outbreak, with the intention of, really just talking to residents there to see what sort of services they were being provided, what sort of precautions were being taken, how people were feeling, kind of being, getting a sort of national attention that certainly, Seminole, which is a town of about 7,000 people, isn't used to. And so I also spent a lot of time speaking to the Mennonite community there, where the outbreak seems to have really taken off. And in the course of doing that, I happened to meet the father of the 6-year-old girl who died from measles.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you've got a question or a comment about what's happening with this West Texas outbreak. And my goal in talking to you, Tom, of course, is to find out more about your reporting, but also try to learn more about the community out there and listen to their concerns with compassion, because I think that's the only way that we can build trust and hopefully do more to try to address an outbreak. So how did you come to meet Peter?
I came to meet Peter. I talked to a number of Mennonite folks in town, and someone had mentioned the name of this particular church where they believe the family attended who had lost the child. Seminole has a quite large Mennonite community. There are at least a half dozen Mennonite churches in that town. This is one of them. It happened to be on the outskirts of town, and I drove to that church just hoping to talk to folks there, and happened to come upon the visitation for this 6-year-old girl who had died. And the father, Peter, was kind enough to take time out of his mourning and in the midst of being grief-stricken to talk about what had happened and talk about the tragedy in their family, and also about what he thought in general about the attention the area had been getting nationally.
So in your reporting in the Atlantic Monthly, you described that you drove up, you approached the building, didn't look like a church, it just looked like a building, and then you were approached by this man. He's in his, appeared late 20s, and you asked him about the outbreak, the measles, and he said, and you asked him if he knew about the fatality, and he, what did he tell you?
I mean, what he told me is he said, that's our kid. I was asking him the same questions I was asking everybody in town, you know, what their experience had been, what they thought of the attention, you know, what they were hearing from others. At the time, I had no idea this was his child. And, you know, we talked for maybe 10 or 15 minutes in general about the situation before I asked that. And then he revealed this was his child and that the visitation for her is what I had sort of walked into the middle of.
Well, let me ask you a question about the visitation, because according to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, when asked about this in a Fox News interview recently, he said that it's almost impossible for healthy individuals to die from infectious diseases like the measles. And he speculated that the child who died in West Texas may have been malnourished or had some other complications. This is despite what health officials have stated, that she had no underlying conditions. You were at the visitation. You write about that you saw the child's body in the homemade coffin. You could see that blonde braids. Could you see any indication that she was particularly malnourished or anything that may have given Robert F. Kennedy Jr. something to support his assertion?
Not in the least. And her siblings and her parents were there, you know, all by all appearances, very healthy. And it's not just me saying that. I know other people who know them and have more longstanding relationships with that family who have told me that, you know, they had zero suspicion of any malnourishment, that they thought that was, I mean, one person that knows them thought that was ridiculous. As you said, the state's health department has said there was no known underlying conditions. I've heard absolutely zero evidence for that, and certainly saw no evidence, you know, for that myself. I mean, and in the article, we quote that same quote you did, where he says, you know, it's almost impossible to die from an infectious disease these days, and we label it as false. And I think it is, I think that just is a false statement.
You know, and as reporting, I know that feeling of you find yourself someplace like at this visitation for this child, and you know, I should not be here. But you're a reporter. You're going to tell the rest of the nation about the situation here. And I think we're all better off for you being there and doing that reporting. But how did it feel for you at that time?
That's a good question. And I think you're right. I think there's a balancing act there, because this is, you're coming upon a family in their most vulnerable moment, in the moment of extreme grief. And I think you have a duty as a reporter to find that information that can be useful. But I think you also have a responsibility to behave in a way that is kind and thoughtful toward, you know, toward everyone, but particularly a family in the middle of a tragedy like this. I went into the visitation. I only went in because Peter invited me to come in. After we had talked for a while, I don't know that I would have asked on my own. And, you know, also in the story, we're sort of careful about the details that we divulge, mm-hmm. about the location of the church, his last name, other things like that. Because I don't think the point of this is to stigmatize or in any way to bring more hurt to this family. It's to tell a story that may be of, you know, greater value to, society.
Yeah. So we're going to dig into that in a bit. I'm coming up on a break that I have to take, but I do want to focus on, you know, how do we listen to this community? We have, you know, they ask a lot of interesting questions, like why does the rest of the nation care so much about this measles outbreak? Why do they care about this fatality? This is a private matter. Don't these types of outbreaks happen you know, with regularity, you know, so there's some, they raise some interesting questions, and I think we need to talk about it some. So we're going to do that coming back on the other side of this break. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're having a conversation with Tom Bartlett. He's a reporter with the Texas Monthly Magazine. He was in West Texas reporting on the outbreak, and the source continues after this.
Thank you. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're speaking with Tom Bartlett. He's a reporter working out of Austin and covering the West Texas measles outbreak for the Atlantic Monthly magazine. He has some astonishing reporting about finding out information about the one fatality that we've had in this outbreak, meeting the family, seeing the visitation of the young girl, and raises a lot of interesting questions, I think, that we do need to discuss. We do need to look inward as we consider why are we covering the story in this way? Why are we talking about it in this manner? So, Tom, when you spoke to a lot of people in that area, you picked up on a historic distrust of the government and medical institutions, and that influences their attitudes towards vaccines. What did you learn?
I think that's right. I mean, there is one thing that I think is important to state is there's no part of the Mennonite doctrine that is against immunizations or against modern medical care. But there has been a tradition in many Mennonite communities, particularly more traditional Mennonite communities, of tending toward homeopathic remedies and perhaps, you know, avoiding, more conventional medicine at various times. But I think sometimes that may get overstated where people think, well, this is a group that doesn't go to the doctor and doesn't seek out immunizations. I did meet Mennonites, particularly some older ones who had been vaccinated. So I think that's an important thing to realize. But I mean, I think I heard some distrust of, about vaccines and about what the government says. As I write in the article, though, a lot of what they said is similar to what I've heard from, folks who aren't Mennonites. And in Seminole, I met a number of people who weren't Mennonites who also said they consider the vaccine, being vaccinated to be a personal decision, and they've, chosen not to do that.
You say that crunchy liberals in Austin that also have these views.
That's right. I mean, I've heard those same views echoed, like almost word for word, discredited ideas about the link between the MMR vaccine and autism, or, also this idea that catching measles and actually having the infection would make your immune system stronger, which is just the opposite of the truth. It actually weakens your immune system for years afterwards. And so, there is obviously a public health communication issue, but it's not just related to Mennonites. It's broader than that.
So when you heard from Peter that he was asking you, why is a national reporter here outside of my church, looking into the death of my daughter, this is a private matter, why does the nation care so much about this? What did you tell him?
I mean, as I write in the article, I don't think I had a great answer for him. As I've thought about it more, I mean, I think the attention here is because vaccination rates have been dropping for routine vaccinations, ever since the pandemic. And so I think there's a broader conversation about the consequences of turning away from vaccination. And, as I also write in the piece, most of us have forgotten what these diseases actually do. And what happened to his daughter is a private tragedy. And it's also a reminder of what used to be, fairly common.
But also we have to be aware, of course, that we have this impulse in our society, this F around and find out type of finger wagging that we do nowadays. I mean, are we also kind of doing that too?
I think we are. And I think, I've certainly seen comments online, that are, harsh toward Peter and toward the Mennonite community. I think that's the wrong message to take away. And I think that's not a helpful way to think about this. I think, as your intro said, thinking about this with empathy and thinking about this in terms of public health messaging, how are we failing to get the message to people about these vaccines and about the fact that they're safe and effective and about the fact that these diseases are serious? And I mean, honestly, it's also coming at a time where the Secretary of Health and Human Services has, trafficked in some of the same ideas, which I think makes it more complicated.
I've seen comments online denying that this fatality is actually real, that they say this was concocted in order to pursue the push forward this pro-vaccine agenda. But you can testify that, yeah, it's as far as this happened.
this happened. I mean, I don't know. I was there at the visitation. I spoke to the father who confirmed this, you know, medical authorities confirmed this. I, you know, you're really, the folks who would say that, I think, are just, they're just not looking at the kind of obvious facts.
So you also report about how in Gaines County and the surrounding areas, they have set up testing sites. They've also set up vaccination sites, trying to, you know, get ahead of the virus, limit the spread. And what did you find out? How's the participation going?
I mean, the participation is kind of modest. They're not getting that many.
That's generous, where you're describing.
I think that's generous. I mean, they're getting very few people coming to get tested, you know, in some cases, two or three a day, you know, and there are likely thousands who've been, you know, to some degree exposed. I mean, I don't know for sure of that number. We certainly know that the number of cases is likely many times higher than the 200 some odd that's been reported. But it's been a struggle, and it's been a struggle to make that work. I mean, I think local health officials seem to be really putting effort into it. And I know in the last week or so, there's been redoubled efforts and some additional messaging and a truck with a digital bulletin board that is driving around town trying to get the word out. It's certainly been an uphill struggle.
I mean, if you look at what we know from the CDC, what it says about measles, and one or three in every 1,000 will have a fatality, maybe one in every 400 or 500 cases. I mean, it will end up in a hospital, or one in five cases will require hospitalization. So if you do the backward math from the numbers of hospitalizations we have and this one fatality, then the numbers of cases are far going to exceed the 200 some odd that have been recorded so far.
I think that's clearly the case. And I think public health officials think that's the case, but it's difficult to get a handle on it. When people aren't coming in for testing, when you have lots of people going to unaccredited religious private schools where they're not, you know, not reporting whether there are cases, and you're not required to report any of that data. And so, you know, I don't think we know, which is a problem. I mean, it's hard to figure out what to do if you don't really understand the scope of the
Anyone mention while you were out there how things are different just across the border into New Mexico, a neighboring state where there are measles cases, but they're far, far fewer?
I don't think we know the full scope of that yet. But I mean, yeah, it's this Seminole is a half hour drive from the New Mexico border, and there are lots of people who go back and forth on the Hobbs Highway there. And so there's a lot of interconnectedness, and, you know, particularly among the Mennonite communities, which are sort of sprawled out. And so there's, you know, I don't think we know the full scope of that.
Well, we know New Mexico has much tougher laws when it comes to being vaccinated, that you just don't fill out a form, and therefore you can not get vaccinated. You really have to run the traps in order to be able to qualify for a vaccine exemption. And so therefore they have a lot fewer vaccination and cases of the measles.
And I think that's true. And I think it's also worth noting that in this current legislative session, Texas, there are a number of legislators who, I think dozens, who have vaccine related bills, some of which would greatly loosen regulations on vaccines. And I think, you know, that coming at this particular time is something people should kind of think long and hard about.
Well, what do you think we can do in order to reach out to the people who decide whether they live in Gaines County or whether they live in Travis County, who decide, oh, we don't want to get vaccinated, we are suspicious of these vaccines? We have someone like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. telling everyone that don't get vaccinated. How do we build trust?
I mean, it's a tough question, and it's one I know that lots of epidemiologists and public health officials spend a lot of time, you know, thinking about. I mean, I would hope that people in general would turn to those infectious disease specialists and epidemiologists and people that actually do this work, and, you know, and turn away from some of the sources that they find online, and those who just don't have a background, and those who haven't seen these diseases up close and don't really know, you know, what they're talking about. And
it's not an easy answer because no one has that answer. we're searching, but I think, Tom, you're reporting in West Texas, talking to the people, listening to the people out there, and I think that's the first step, will give us some answers how we can rebuild trust and build up public health in the state of Texas. Tom Bartlett, thank you so much for coming on board. He's an Austin-based journalist for the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, David.
We're going to take a break. We're going to do some pitching for the Texas Public Radio Pledge Drive, and we'll be right back.
This is Dan Katz, TPR's Vice President of News. We're covering a historic presidency in Congress. The Trump administration has promised to transform the federal government, and it has followed through at a pace never seen before, carrying out bold and controversial policy agendas on everything from health and immigration to foreign policy and government efficiency. We have a duty to be there to keep the priorities of our listeners top of mind, and to stick to the facts, and to let the journalistic process guide us. Old-fashioned shoe-leather reporting, editing, and fact-checking. To be real and honest, to own up to our mistakes when they happen, to let civil dialogue unfold naturally on the air and in our community events. Protecting this kind of journalism is what we stand for. And if you want to stand up for us and stand with us, the time is now. Please make a pledge to defend TPR, and thank you.
And you can call now, 800-622-8977. Our spring pledge drive is underway, and we're looking forward to you joining us, making sure that Texas Public Radio remains strong. We do have a nonprofit partner for every new and upgraded sustainer. Bubble Bath Car Wash will help provide a nutritious home-delivered meal to a neighbor in need through Meals on Wheels. So there is a lot of motivation for you to become a member right now at Texas Public Radio. And you can sign on, call in, 800-622-8977. We will celebrate you joining and becoming a member. Or you can also go online to tpr.org, or you can use the app. And so I'm David Martin Davies. This is the Texas Public Radio Spring Pledge Drive, and our goal is to remind you how important Texas Public Radio is to your daily life, keeping you informed, keeping you entertained, keeping you motivated. And so we are a valued resource in hundreds of cities and towns across the nation, including our own public radio. Is something that, you know, every city has a great public radio station, but I think ours is the best. You know, don't fault me for thinking that, because I know it's true. And keep us strong. Keep us the best. Call in at 800-622-8977. And now please welcome Rebecca Cavan. Rebecca, hey.
Hey. Well, Dave, you know, today's show is a tough reminder of how important information and education are in keeping our communities safe. Y'all, Dave is here every day bringing you vital news, vital conversations that matter the most. And today we need your support to keep that going. Your donation helps fund this station's work, bringing you these stories, insights, and the updates that you are relying on. So if you value this program and the impact it has, please consider contributing. Together, we can keep these crucial conversations going. So you can call in or visit our website to donate right now. We are up against a challenge. If we can bring $5,000 in through the door before 3 p.m., we get another $5,000, and we are down to $4,029 left to go to reach that challenge. We have 421 new and upgraded sustainers since we started this spring fundraising drive, and you have all made that happen, so thank you.
Many of us can remember a time when there was no public radio station, no NPR station in San Antonio, and if you're grateful for the fact that we do have one, I want to tell you about Joe Gwatney, mm-hmm. who was our founding father at TPR, and we lost him last night. He passed away, but he really he founded KUT, and he was a founder at NPR, and then he brought public radio to San Antonio. We couldn't be here without him. We will always be grateful, always be reminded of his leadership, his kindness, his humanity. Everything that we strive for, he embodied. He was intelligent. He was graceful. He was a force of power. I will always just, I admired him and thought of him as somebody who really knew how to make things happen in challenging times. We need more people like Joe Gwatney in our lives and in our world. And I just wanted to say, take the minute to say that.
Yeah, that amazing voice, too.
Oh, yeah, powerful.
I mean, such a powerful, and just a presence about him. I didn't get to work with him. I only got to meet him at our member events. But everybody loves spending time with Joe, and you can honor his legacy today.
You know, the scrappy days when we were starting this station. I wasn't here for that, but I came in on the tail end, And, you know, he gave me my start, Texas Matters, and then hired me as news director and started the newsroom. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you,
Joe. We appreciate it. And one more time, here's our number, 800-622-8977.